Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news from the week up to the 25th of November 2019. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story looks at a survey of over 1,500 employees by Resume Lab about their perceptions of workspaces and various amenities. The starting point is a well-known link between satisfaction and productivity in the workplace. Those who are satisfied with their company's office and amenities were significantly more likely to be satisfied with their job. The survey notes that happy and motivated employees can make or break a company's success, but it isn't always about money in their pocket. With so much emphasis on a healthy work environment, an office's layout may be enough to attract or turn off employees and improve well-being or performance. When it came to attracting employees and improving performance and well-being, private workspaces were also named the top amenity. Private spaces to relax, on the other hand, were the amenity named most likely to improve well-being. Kate, would you agree with Mark Wilson of Fast Company that if you want a happy employee, then privacy trumps design?
The most important thing to me from this story is that if you want a happy employee, you have to show you care about them. And that might change from company to company. I think we can all recognise that open plan offices aren't terribly private places. You have to move yourself away if you want to concentrate or you want to have a private conversation. So I absolutely recognise the importance of that. Similarly, you don't want to see people eating their lunch at their desk. You want them to have some time away just to really regenerate, recharge their batteries. So again, as we've talked about previously, offices need to cater to many different needs. So we're not just going to make people happy by giving them private space, but we are going to make them much happier by signalling we really care about their work environment.
Thank you very much, Kate. Our next story looks at a tech entrepreneur who is encouraging his employees to disconnect from technology. Forbes writer Carlin Berinsky reports that Hinge CEO Justin McLeod has deleted his email and social media from his own phone and also encouraged his people to follow this example and do the same. Though he's made the choice to reduce or eliminate certain technology from his experience, McLeod has also adapted different tools to his workflow to best support his team. Everyone who works closely with me at Hinge knows that if something's truly urgent, they have to text me. So texts come through urgently, and I'll respond to a text urgently, but anything that gets sent over email, I'll just get to it when I'm next at a computer. Kate, my question is, what can leaders do to cultivate an environment in which employees utilise technology effectively but not addictively?
I think the first thing they can do is not insist because it works for them personally, then it works should work for everybody else. As we've spoken about before, for some people, not having access to their email 24/7 provokes more anxiety than the perceived need to respond to them. And it's ironic, I think, in a company that actually relies on people being online so much in order to consume their product, is encouraging people not to do that. Nevertheless, we do spend too much time. And it's funny, even when you read this, email seems such an outdated means of communication almost already. And texting, WhatsApp voice audios, there are so many ways you can communicate with your colleagues that don't require what is essentially the digital version of a memo. So let's think about what works for each company, for each individual, and how we get the best out of the sector we're in with the technology that we use. But I'm so against turning things off for people if it actually means they feel disempowered or indeed less productive.
Thank you very much, Kate. Our next story asks if Lloyd's anti-bullying posters are examples of good citizenship or are they actually overreach? Lloyd's of London has a new campaign against bullying and harassment that stretches its influence beyond the firm's premises and into surrounding leisure spots. In a variety of posters put up in local pubs and bars, Lloyd's instructs patrons to steer clear of particular types of conduct and to speak out against those behaviours if they witness them. Examples of the phrases used in the posters include banter at others' expense, it's not funny, it's harassment, uninvited advances or physical contact, that's not a joke, that's harassment, and Lloyd's, no place for unacceptable behaviour. Each poster provides the number of a confidential advice line and a Lloyd's URL for additional online resources. The campaign is part of a broader initiative on the insurer's part to drive significant cultural change following the September publication of findings from the largest culture survey ever conducted in the sector that found, for example, 8% of all respondents had witnessed sexual harassment over the previous 12 months. Is this campaign an example of strong corporate citizenship, or is it reaching too far into employees' own time?
It's funny that this has appeared this week because, of course, last week the Institute was at the Global Peter Drucker Forum in Vienna. We are a partner in the forum, and the subject under discussion was that of ecosystems. And I think if anything illustrates an ecosystem, it's the Lloyd's of London Group, because they are connected with so many different size firms, so many individuals, and to recognise that their zero tolerance, as it were, for harassment extends beyond employees is absolutely the correct response to the complexity and the interrelatedness and the connections between businesses today, and they are going to increase. So they're making a very, very positive statement. And of course, where people engage in leisure activities is most likely to be the place where these sorts of situations arise. And these are great reminders. I really don't think that this is overdoing it. I think this is good corporate citizenship.
Thank you, Kay. Our next story asks if bad bosses are driving the UK's increase in sick days. This is taken from a ComRes poll for the BBC on morality in the workplace that found 2 in every 5 adults would happily take a sick day if they felt they needed a day off, meaning that they would essentially be lying about the reason why they are absent. Speaking to the BBC, occupational psychologist Hayley Lewis pointed out, it's often more about your relationship with your line manager. And if you're not getting on with them, and you can't solve the problem behind your exhaustion, it's something easier just to pull a sickie. Also, in sectors where jobs have been cut, people are facing increased strain in their roles. Crucially, she added, we look to role models. If the boss is dragging themselves in, not taking breaks, eating lunch at their desk, it reinforces the message that it is not okay to take a break. If workers don't feel that they can comfortably request conventional leave, Lewis said, then they will feel they have no option but to call in sick. Kate, is part of the responsibility to this problem down to the example that bosses are setting to their employees?
We know that managers role model the sorts of behaviour that send out messages about what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. So if you see somebody dragging themselves into work, working long hours, not taking proper breaks, and they're in a senior position, the message that that's sending out is that's how we do things here. So you can understand people feel quite constrained or reluctant to not imitate and replicate that behaviour. I think, again, we get back to the line manager with so many responsibilities. But if you recognise that somebody is working under too much pressure or behaving unusually, then it is the line manager that should suggest taking a break. We have so many regimented leave policies, so managers can't very easily give out days leave. But if somebody is under stress, essentially, they are not well. They shouldn't be in the office. And they're, in a way, recognising that they need a break is somebody's way of actually rewarding themselves for the extra effort that they put in. And I think people will always do that, won't they, Rod? They'll decide what's fair for themselves.
They will indeed, Kate.
And what we're trying to do, what this particular story is focusing on, is that it's not okay just to ignore the problem.
Thank you very much, Kate. I wonder if you'd like to finish this podcast with a brief word about International Leadership Week.
International Leadership Week was absolutely brilliant. We had contributions from almost every one of the 7 continents and so many different insights, perspectives. We had academics, we had thought leaders, we had young leaders, we had people grappling with the problem of working for multinationals with hundreds and thousands of employees. And in so many ways, it just reminded us all that the challenges of leading and managing, they transcend national boundaries.
Thank you very much, Kate. And I must agree, it was a phenomenal effort, and the Institute should be proud of what was achieved and what we learned about management for that week. That concludes this week's episode, and listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.